I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. My guest is LaFontaine Oliver, who today becomes WIPR's new president and general manager. Mr. Oliver succeeds Tony Brandon, who was chosen to lead the station when the Your Public Radio Corporation purchased the broadcast license from Johns Hopkins University in 2002. WIPR is one of 265 NPR member stations, all of which are locally owned and operated, and we are one of 90 stations that is independent of a larger entity like a college or university. What are the challenges facing WIPR and other media outlets as we enter this new chapter in a marketplace of ideas, information, and entertainment that includes an unprecedented number of choices? LaFontaine Oliver joins me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a good weekend. Today marks an important milestone here at WIPR Radio. For the first time in 17 years, we have a new president and general manager. After 6 years heading a station in Orlando, Florida, LaFontaine Oliver is succeeding Tony Brandon, who has retired. So we thought it'd be nice to introduce you to Mr. Oliver as he takes the reins here at Your Public Radio, and we invite you to join us. This is your chance to weigh in with our new boss, to let him know what opportunities you see for WIPR, how can we best contribute to the regional media landscape, and our communities. How important is the local programming you hear on WIPR, and what kinds of national and international offerings are of most interest to you? What kinds of stories would you like to hear here on Midday? What podcasts are you listening to, and what do you see as WIPR's role in our community, and what advice would you have for LaFontaine Oliver and the rest of us as we enter this new chapter? You can join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR, and we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page as well. LaFontaine, welcome to Midday, welcome to WIPR, and welcome back, because yes, you are no stranger to the Baltimore-Washington area.
I am not, but Tom, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And so we'll talk about your roots here in this community, but just to start, you know, you've made a professional decision to change locations. You were here in Baltimore, then you're in Orlando, now you're back here in Baltimore in a different capacity. What opportunities do you see for yourself professionally and more broadly for WIPR as we move forward in this new chapter?
Well, Tom, I've got to tell you, I see lots of opportunities. You know, I'm a third generation radio guy. I love radio through and through, and just the chance to come back to a place where, you know, I think I mentioned once before, you know, I really learned the importance that a public media organization can have as it relates to lifting up its community. And Baltimore's a community that I love and care a great deal about. So it was an exciting opportunity to sort of come back here and then to, you know, to grow as a leader in the system, and then to figure out how I could use my experience to help WIPR. Obviously, you know, the station has had just a rich history and some real success here. And so how can I use my experience to build on that and hopefully take it to new heights and do new things that will continue to cement its place in the media landscape here in Baltimore as a primary source for, you know, news and information and storytelling and perspectives and, you know, community engagement, all of those things. So just really excited about that.
And your family roots are here in the Baltimore, Washington area, right?
Yeah. So I'm actually a native Washingtonian. But I met my beautiful wife here in Baltimore, attended UB and got my MBA there, and ran another public radio station here in Baltimore for about six or seven years. And so certainly no stranger to Baltimore.
And when you talk about being a third generation radio person, I mean, this does, you got this to a certain extent in your DNA.
Yeah. You know, my dad worked in the D.C. market, and we did not know his biological father until after he'd passed, and we learned that he also had a bit of a stint in radio. So it is, I would say, in the blood or in the DNA. And I do truly feel fortunate every day to wake up and do something that I absolutely love. Not a lot of people have can say that, and so I feel very fortunate.
And you have experience not only in front of the microphone, but behind the microphone in the front office. I mean, talk about your broadcasting experience in your career on that side of it.
Wow, so it's interesting. I could take my broadcasting career all the way back to sitting at my father's feet or even back growing up. The National Children's Museum in Washington, D.C. had a small children's radio outfit that I would work on during the summers. And then fast forward quite a bit, you know, I did my undergraduate studies at the University of Miami, and there I had just the phenomenal opportunity to run that station as its general manager, where, you know, I really started to learn the nuts and bolts of radio, did some work in front of the microphone, but certainly behind the microphone as well. Worked in commercial radio for a number of years with a stint there in South Florida, and then back in this area. Worked for Radio One, worked for Radio One Corporate, did some work for XM Satellite Radio, and you know, a number of years ago made the transition to public radio, and you know, just sort of kind of found my place and sort of and never looked back. So it's been I've been very fortunate. It's been a great career to have seen a lot in this business, to see a lot to change, to see the advent of satellite radio come along, and to be a part of working with the team of folks that launched a bunch of channels there. And then, like I said, to be able to sort of find a home in public media, which has been just really, really great.
When we think about the difference between commercial and public media, I mean, the basic difference is that, you know, commercial stations sell advertising and public media does not. We rely on our members and some, you know, philanthropic funding and a little bit of money from the government. But the attitude, the vibe runs deeper than that. As you see it, what is the particular capacity for a public radio station in a community like ours that perhaps our commercial brethren do not share?
Well, and I would be, you know, careful to sort of paint with a broad brush, but I would say, you know, public service is at the core, I think, of what we do each and every day. And we have a business model that I think illustrates that in that, you know, we give our product away every single day. We give it away, and we simply ask that those in our community who listen and who find value in what we do, that they would then turn around and support that, you know, financially. And so that's a different model. And what that does is it also, I think it connects us to our audience. It connects us to our members in a very different way than perhaps audiences are connected to commercial enterprises, because we really do rely on each other. You know, it is our job, I think, to reflect our communities, to amplify our communities, and to also be good stewards of the resources that our communities provide us in order to produce this public service each and every day. And so, you know, that's sort of the piece there that I think oftentimes separates us from some of our commercial counterparts. But certainly there are folks, you know, on that side who are also doing very good work and who feel a similar connection to their communities and to their audience. But that's just in our DNA. I think it's how we're made up. You know, I also think that you know, oftentimes we are afforded an opportunity to think about things like the underserved, to think about You know, sometimes there are, whether it's formats or other things that may not be considered commercially viable, that we make space and time for because they are important, you know. I think back to, you know, a couple years ago, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Public Broadcasting Act. And in it, you know, sort of the commentary from President Lyndon Johnson, he talked about, you know, the act enriching man's spirit. He talked about that as sort of a calling for public media. And so I'd like to think that stations like WYPR do just that through programs, you know, like your program, through some of the national and international content. I think it goes beyond just news and information. It's arts and culture and storytelling and all, and some of those things that I think really do speak to the spirit of the act, which was about enriching man's spirit.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today is our new president and general manager here at WIPR Radio, LaFontaine Oliver. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. And we are also streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. Let us know what you think about what you hear on WIPR, what you might want to hear if you're not hearing it currently, the kinds of stories we should be doing here on Midday, the kind of podcasts you're interested in, the kind of media appraisal that you would give the kind of work we're doing and what you'd like to see change. LaFontaine Oliver begins his tenure as only our second general manager and president today. It's his first day at work, and we are messing up his lunch hour by having him come here and join us in the studio. You know, you mentioned serving different communities. Your experience before the station that you were just at in Orlando, Florida, was here at WEAA Radio, our good friends at Morgan State University. Talk about that experience. You ran, as you said, you ran EAA for 6 or 7 years. How will that experience and your understanding of Baltimore and our community at that time, which a bunch of stuff has happened since,
absolutely,
you know, as you well know, how will that inform your approach to WYPR?
That's a good question, Tom. I don't know that I fully know the answer to that yet. I think that that's something that is going to continue to evolve and sort of be revealed to me. But what I will say is I think my time at WEAA served me well in learning about the opportunities that perhaps are there for YPR as it relates to continuing to reflect the diversity that is here in Baltimore and, you know, throughout the state of Maryland. You know, we were able to do some really wonderful things, you know, during my time there. You know, we at a, you know, small station, we were able to launch a national show out of
The Michael Eric Dyson.
Yes, the Michael Eric Dyson show. And I think it is really there where I started to truly understand what community engagement was really about. And I think that will serve me well here. It certainly served me well in Orlando as, you know, you start to figure out how to induce that sampling amongst folks in your community. But there's an old saying, you got to know them before you need them. And so I think part of what I learned there is, how do you get to know the community? How do you become an authentic part of what a community is about, the fibers of that community, and go beyond just being a radio station, go beyond just being an outfit that broadcasts out to that organization, but one that amplifies it and reflects it. And so I think it's there where I really sort of learned what community engagement was really about. There's I forget who to attribute it to, but one of the big minds or thinkers in our business said something to the effect that, you know, community outreach is, you know, sort of when you look to change someone else. Community engagement is when you yourself are changed. And I've really embraced that, you know, really since I heard that concept, because what really should be happening is that we should be changed by what happens with these relationships with our community. It's not just about us, you know, doing outreach to them. It's about true engagement, which if that happens, both parties should be affected and both parties should be changed. So I think that's something that I can certainly bring to what we are doing here at WYPR.
LaFontaine Oliver is WYPR's new president and general manager. We will continue our conversation and take your calls, comments, and emails after a quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, that's always highly encouraged, @TomHallWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk about the state of conservatism in America. The Pulitzer Prize-winning commentator and syndicated columnist George Will will join me to talk about his latest book, The Conservative Sensibility. And Thomas Frank joins me as well. He's the author of the bestseller, What's the Matter with Kansas? How Conservatives Won the Heart of America. So George Will, Thomas Frank, and the Future of Constitutional Conservatism in the Age of Donald Trump. That's our topic tomorrow here on Midday. If you just joined us today, my guest is LaFontaine Oliver, the new president and general manager of WYPR, who's spending part of his first day on the job with us here in Studio A. You are welcome to join us, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR, and you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming live. When we talk, LaFontaine, about being responsive and engaged with the community, we live here in a community in Baltimore that's 65% African-American. You are one of the few African-American executives in the NPR system, at least one of the few that I'm aware of. And so I, for one, am thrilled, along with many of the other folks here in this building and around the community, that, you know, WYPR is now going to be led by an African-American person who brings that perspective. What is it that we can do to be attracting more African-Americans to our staff here, to our board, to our listenership, and involving, you know, folks to have solutions to the issues that our city in particular faces that are, you know, solved communally by both African-Americans, Caucasians, and others in our community?
Yeah, Tom. So that's a great question, and one with many layers. It's like an onion. You've got to keep peeling there. But I think I will start by saying it's incumbent upon people like me, I think, to ensure that is a part of the strategic plan of this organization or organizations like YPR, and to make that a priority. I think it's easy to say, you know, we want a diverse work environment, and we want, you know, a diverse board, and we want to serve a diverse constituency. But it's something else to make that a priority and to put in place strategies to make that happen. One of the things you got to do is you got to be able to measure it. You got to be able to say, hey, you know, well, you know, how are we doing? And so first and foremost, you know, I would say, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I'd like to pay particular attention to is, you know, how do we do that from, as you mentioned, from a board perspective, from a staff recruiting perspective? I can tell you, you know, there are a number of programs in our system designed around increasing the number of, you know, diverse journalists and others in our business.
And the system you're talking about here is the NPR.
Yes, in the public media system. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm a part of almost all of those efforts. And but you have to be very intentional about all of that. And, you know, as you point out, what was it, 65%? Mm-hmm. You said African-American makeup here, you know, so that means that, You know, there's a real opportunity there, and there's an opportunity there because these are folks that we want listening, and we want supporting, and we want calling in and writing in and tweeting and being a part of the discussion, so that what we have is a rich environment here that really, you know, reflects the diversity, you know, of this area. And so I will be spending some real time sort of looking at how we continue to improve. I don't think anyone has arrived, anyone who has done it. I think the second you say, oh, we've got that thing licked, we're done with that, I think, you know, that's a problem. I think it's something that we continue to work at. But I'm involved in lots of discussions and projects and initiatives in our system that I think will help me to help this organization to continue the progress in making that happen from a listenership standpoint and a donor standpoint and staffing and board and all of those things. And I'm excited about that.
LaFontaine Oliver is our new president and general manager. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. As you can imagine, there's plenty of folks more than willing to offer suggestions and advice. In your position, you get a lot of advice. We've gotten a number of calls concerning Mark Steiner and the situation that occurred about 11 years ago here when Mark was let go from the station. This is still something that a lot of people think about. I've got at least one email. We've got a couple of calls. Let's go to one of them who I think wants to talk about that. This is Bill in Pigtown. Bill, welcome to Midday with LaFontaine Oliver.
Hi, from Barry Circle / Pigtown. I'm one of founding members. First, welcome, Mr. Oliver.
Thank you.
I'm a founding member of the station in that I responded to the call to raise money to buy this, to get the station established. And then gave, but since Mark was separated, I diminished my giving, but always write some sort of letter of complaint. And now I think it's been a while since I've actually sent in money, and that's wrong, because I listen a lot. And I'm hoping and I'm wondering whether you're thinking of bringing Mark back into the fold.
Well, I guess on my first day here, I would say I have not put any thought to that. But
we should say that when Mark did leave WYPR, you were at WEAA and you hired him there.
I did. I was, in fact, responsible for that. And, you know, Mark had a great run there at EAA as well. And I think did quite a bit to contribute to building an audience there at that station. So I certainly appreciate the question, but I would say at my first day here at the station, that not something that I have yet considered. One of the things that I think is important for someone in this role, first and foremost, is to listen. And so I appreciate the caller, because that gives me an opportunity to sort of, you know, begin to hear perspectives, listening to the audience, listening to the staff, listening to the folks in our newsroom, listening to our board of trustees, our community advisory board. Before any decisions are made, I think it's important to settle in and to what I've called go on a listening tour, to really be able to get a sense of, you know, where the challenges are, where the opportunities exist. So, caller, thank you so much for weighing in with that.
We have an email from Philip in Hampstead, who says, programming suggestion, add 1A to the weekday schedule. It's a great show produced just down the road. Of course, we air an hour of 1A, which is produced down at WAMU Radio in the evenings here on WYPR. But in terms of programming, we have another caller who suggested, didn't stay on the line, but suggested, you know, perhaps doing more talk at night rather than jazz. I mean, of course, Andy Bienstock, our program director and the host of the jazz program in the evening, has a number of very ardent fans as well. But in terms of your approach to programming and how you make decisions, because obviously, you know, no show lasts forever, and there are things that get moved around. Sometimes, you know, the time slot is different for the same show, etc. Do you have a general philosophy? Do you have a general way of approaching those kinds of decisions?
You know, I do actually. It is, you know, I've always said programming decisions, it's part art and part science, in that we've got a lot of information out there that we can use in order to make decisions. So, you know, we can look at audience numbers provided through Nielsen to see how programs are performing. We can look at how programs are performing, or blocks of programs are performing on other similarly formatted stations in markets that we might benchmark ourselves against. So, and then there's other, you know, more qualitative data that we can pull. And then there's just getting out and talking to people. But ultimately, the other side of that coin is, you know, it is, you know, part and art. It's a gut, and it's being able to sort of take the information and, you know, take some of the other things and then to make decisions about, you know, what you think is going to resonate most with your audience. So, again, that becomes a part of that that initial listening tour. And I appreciate the folks who've weighed in already. Certainly 1A is a wonderful program. I actually know Joshua very, very well. He and I actually did college radio together at University of Miami.
No, so you go way back.
Yes,
yeah.
We do. I was general manager of our station, and he came in and started doing news. So I know Joshua well. I was actually on the sort of panel of station leaders brought Joshua on, and that were sort of helping WAMU as they were looking at how to fashion a show to come behind such a powerful show as the Diane Rehm Show. So very, very familiar with that. But it, again, that'll be a part of the listening tour and sort of getting all of the data in and working with the smart and wonderful folks here like Andy Beanstock and others to then figure out the way forward. Where are there opportunities for us to continue to capture more and more audience share and to continue to serve the folks of Baltimore in an even bigger way.
In terms of ratings, how do ratings figure into the calculus in public radio? Do they figure into that calculus differently than in commercial radio? Obviously, commercial radio says, okay, we have X number of people listening, therefore we can charge you X for the ads that you run during those programs. Something similar happens here, I suppose. We have X number of people listening. Therefore, if you become an underwriter, we don't call it advertising. Mm-hmm. Here we call it underwriting. It's based on ratings. But as you say, there's a broader public mission of public radio, which is also publicly funded by individual donations who are not donating because, you know, something specific happens between 7:30 and 8:30 in the morning. But how do you take into account the importance of the numbers of bodies listening at any one time?
Yeah, that's a good question. It goes back to something that I describe as sort of metrics and mission or margin and mission, is that you've got to be able to sort of balance all of those things. I mean, those audience ratings are tools that are there. You know, there used to be a time where the non-coms or the public radio stations were not listed sort of in the book alongside our commercial counterparts. But that has now changed. And so that does give us an opportunity to sort of see on a regular basis how are we performing as it relates to attracting and retaining an audience from a CUM standpoint, from a time spent listening or time spent exposed standpoint. And I think, you know, again, I started in commercial media. And so those are tools that I'm very, very comfortable with and that I've learned to really embrace as a part of sort of a tool in the tool chest, so to speak. But certainly in public media and even in commercial media, I think you have to sort of balance that with all sorts of other factors. You know, are you counter programming against someone else in your market? You know, are you Are you looking to make an impact as it relates to, you know, a particular segment of your audience? There are all sorts of things to consider. So I consider it a tool in the tool belt or the tool chest, so to speak. But, you know, I don't think we make most of us, I would say, make decisions solely based on, you know, those types of metrics and those things.
LaFontaine Oliver is the new president and general manager here at Your Public Radio, WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWIPR. You can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. We have an email from Julie, who says that nationally, NPR has many female hosts and reporters. And then she says, by contrast, there's an extremely small number of female reporters and hosts on WIPR. That's a premise I would question, because three of our four people in the newsroom are women: Emily Sullivan, Mary Rose Madden, and Rachel Bay. And of course, Sheila Cast hosts the other locally produced program that airs in the morning, On the Record. But her question is a valid one. How will you increase women's voices on the station in addition to other forms of diversity?
Well, it's just like anything else, as I started with. You've got to be intentional about it, and you have to measure it. And you know, thank you to that caller or commenter. In public media, I think there is absolutely more intentionality now around diversity of all kinds, racial and ethnic, gender, you know, socioeconomic, geographic. And so I think, again, as a part of that listening tour, to figure out where are there opportunities for the station to continue to do a better job of serving its public and, you know, reflecting the diversity that's there. And so certainly that is something that I'm happy to keep an eye on as well. But as you pointed out, I think some really powerful, wonderful voices of women here on WYPR, and certainly we want to continue to be able to lift them up. So.
How long have you been on the NPR board of directors?
So technically I have been on the board about 3.5 years. So I'm actually completing my first full 3-year term at the end of this year. But I served a partial term during a period where they restructured the bylaws of NPR, and they added a certain number of new board members, both public members and what they call station A reps or station managers. And so I was appointed to an initial term that really only lasted about 1/2 a year. And then I sat for my first full election. And so coming up here, I'll actually have to run a campaign to see
to retain
my seat on the NPR.
Well, it's interesting because these last few years that have, you know, coincided with your membership on the board have been tumultuous in many ways for NPR. I mean, when we talk about gender diversity, there have been some, you know, serious allegations and incidences of sexual harassment, and you were involved, I think, in some of those board level decisions about that. Former news director Michael Oreskes let go from the network from NPR because of those kinds of allegations. A couple of personalities on the air are no longer there because of, you know, what people are broadly grouping into what they call Me Too moments, you know, and movements. This is an issue in every industry. It's an issue in, you know, law and medicine and education and business and high tech, low tech, you know, bus drivers, anybody in any job.
Absolutely.
Women are facing this kind of, you know, behavior in particular. What did you learn from your involvement in that from the perspective of the board at NPR?
Wow. So, you know, I think one of the things that I learned is how important the strong, steady hand of leadership is when those types of challenges, you know, come about. And as you accurately pointed out, I don't think there's an industry that has been spared as it relates to this. we're at a real inflection point here, and organizations are having to really examine their work environments and workplace culture, and looking at and sometimes challenging some norms and behaviors and things like that. But what I saw on display there with NPR, and I think NPR member stations like WYPR and others should be proud of, is that we saw strong leadership really come in and say, we're going to value our people, and we're going to value their experiences, and we're going to do whatever we have to do to make sure that we correct our work environment. And that was an interesting and tough time for NPR, and a tough part for those of us who were board members.
LaFontaine Oliver is the new president and general manager of WYPR. We will continue our conversation after a quick break at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. So before we go to that break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in our city during the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. We get their names from Ellen Worthing, who has compiled a list of Baltimore homicide victims for the past 18 years. We also consult the Baltimore Sun's list of homicides and victim identifications that are posted on the Baltimore Police Department's Facebook page. So far this year, 157 people in our community have lost their lives to violence. Police have released the identities of two victims whose deaths were reported the week before last. They are Jamal Dixon, age 31, and Christopher Sutton, age 34. 11 people lost their lives to violence in our city last week. So far, 3 of them have been identified. They are Kenneth Whitley, age 33, Orion Rule, age 25, and Darius Jones. He was 19 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest today is the new president and general manager of WYPR Radio, LaFontaine Oliver. He's a veteran broadcaster and broadcast executive with experience in both commercial and public radio. He's a member of the board of directors of NPR. He's the former general manager of public radio station WMFE in Orlando, Florida. And before that, from 2007 to 2013, he was the head honcho at WEAA Radio, the public radio station at Morgan State University, just up the road here in Baltimore. To join our conversation with LaFontaine Oliver, it's 410-662-8780. If you want to give us a call, to send us an email, midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet, @MiddayWYPR. We are also streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. LaFontaine, let's go back to the phones to Max in Harwood. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hey, very much. I have a couple of comments that might speak to that issue of diversity that y'all have mentioned several times. But before that, I just wanted to say thank you so much for the work you do. It's crucially important, and exactly that sort of bearing witness that you just brought us all into that you do every Monday is so essential and so meaningful. So thank y'all for that. But the two comments are, one, I know y'all have job postings, and you also have internship opportunities. But one thing that I think you might consider is something more like an apprenticeship program, sort of like Baltimore Bike Works has, where people that are interested but might not have the skills yet can sort of learn on the job and sort of be compensated, you know, maybe modestly, but sort of given more and more responsibility over time. So that's one thought. And the second is, I would love to hear the sort of hyper-local news reporting, maybe in the vein that Sean Yost was doing a couple years ago on WEAA. Maybe it's commentary heavy or not, but just that sort of like bringing policy wonks from Baltimore and history buffs from Baltimore to talk about those really, really local issues. I would love to hear that. But thank you all so much for your programming. It's such a blessing.
Well, thanks for the call, Max. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Max.
Any comment in particular?
No, great, great suggestions. I think one of the things that public media is finding a sweet spot in right now is that hyper local content. Communities across the country, some of our friends on the print side are still experiencing, kind of these seismic changes. And so more and more what's happening is that people like our caller are looking for their local public radio station to take up some of that slack and to be able to have, some of that that deep local or hyper local journalism. That sort of goes beyond the headline, which is what public media has, has really thrived on and been so successful at, is being able to go in depth. So spot on there.
Got a couple of questions about reception. Ed sends us an email. Any efforts to improve reception in Westminster and Carroll County? It's frustrating to listen to the station while driving because the reception is spotty. Paige says, I'm a satisfied longtime listener here. In the recent past, my reception with the same equipment on my end has varied from day to day, and the HD stations aren't being transmitted, is what Paige says. I get the HD signal on the station in my office right here, so it's working on my HD radio. But will transmission issues be something that you'll take a look at? Is there a possibility of our, expanding the area in which people can hear us a little more easily?
Yeah, so I would say those are things that are pretty high on my priority, is to look at where there are opportunities to do just that. Those are not easy feats, but we ran into some similar sort of challenges at my station there in Orlando, and we were able to pick up another signal. There are lots of ways to sort of get at those issues, and so that will be a part of my priority coming in, is figuring out all the ways that we can serve more people. And part of it is, can you expand the footprint of your signal to make sure that folks on the fringe of what the commission considers your protected contour, that you can either improve that. And there's a lot that goes into that. And none of those things are inexpensive, but certainly those are things that we want to look at as we start to figure out how can we reach and serve more people.
And by the way, Paige is absolutely right. Our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall, informs me that our HD transmissions have been out now for some weeks. We're having trouble with that. So they are on the case. They are working on it, and hopefully we'll get that back as soon as we can. Lynn in Baltimore County says, I'd like to see more coverage of the political and social events in the counties around Baltimore City. And Lynn, we did do a midday on the county series a couple of years ago, and we certainly talked to the candidates for elective office in Baltimore County and Anne Arundel, Howard County. But good idea to take a close look at what's going on in the regional footprint of our signal. Let's go to Robert in Severna Park on the phone. Robert, welcome to Midday with LaFontaine Oliver.
Hello. Hello. This is Harry. I'm up Robert. And I like the way that you can all have your schedule set up in the mornings with On Point from 10 to 11. I've been a member since back in the days of, I guess, around JHU and when you all first came on. I'm sort of a mercenary because I get the station down in D.C. too, where I can listen to 1A if I want to. But yeah. I certainly prefer On Point to 1A, and I'd be very happy just is the schedule remains.
Okay, Robert. Well, I appreciate that comment. Thanks very much. Of course, you know, you're going to get advice from all around the spectrum. Let's go to Tom in Mount Vernon. Tom, welcome to Midday with LaFontaine Oliver.
Good afternoon. Mr. Oliver, I'd like to say that with WYPR, one of their greatest resources, sir, is their production staff. And because they put these programs on, Mr. Hall and other people that actually could hear on the radio, they don't really hear from the producers that much, but they're the ones that put it together. You should get to know them, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that comment, Tom, and thanks for listening. Dale comments on Facebook, welcome back, Mr. Oliver. I know him from WEAA at Morgan as an engaged progressive manager, and I'd like to suggest a co-ed radio version of The View.
Huh.
Co-ed. I don't know. That'd be fun. That's a good idea, Dale. I appreciate
that.
Thank
you, Dale.
Thank you so much. The issue of satellite and so-called terrestrial radio versus satellite radio. Remember when Howard Stern left his day job and went to satellite radio, they paid him a gazillion dollars, and he was going to, you know, transform HD radio and satellite radio, Sirius XM, all that kind of stuff. Where does that fit into the future plans of stations like ours? I mean, are more and more people going to be listening to us on a satellite basis or an HD basis? And what's the difference between HD and satellite? Because I know I confuse them a lot in a way that listeners do too, and we're all wrong when it comes to that.
Yeah. So you know So Sirius XM, they provide really a completely different service from what we consider terrestrial broadcasting, and HD radio, as we know it, is really a part of the terrestrial sort of broadcasting world. This is where we're able to provide the HD signal for our main service, for the BBC service, for classical service on the sub-channels. Now, one of the challenges, of course, is, you know, unlike the kind of digital conversion that happened with television, where it was mandated by the commission. So if you remember, there was a period there where they said, you know, either you're going to get a new television or you're going to get a converter box or you're not going to be able to receive an over the air signal. That did not happen on the radio side. And so I think in some ways, if that had happened, adoption of HD radio technology would be much further along. What I will say is it is very interesting that a number of people, they have HD radios in their automobiles and don't even know it, because unfortunately, some of the education around HD is not there. But to go back to sort of the first part of the question there, whether you're talking, you know, satellite, which radio, which you can receive some public radio programming on, or if you're talking HD, we're talking about the smartphones that we all sort of carry around in our pockets. We're talking smart speakers. We're talking streaming online. I think there continues to be many different opportunities for folks to get content. And so we as public broadcasters have to be thinking about staking claim to every platform where our listeners may roam.
We will try to find the listeners wherever they are, and we are grateful to them when they tune in. It's interesting. Edison Research had a recent survey that said between AM and FM radio, 72% of that kind of radio is supported by ads, and then the ads supporting Sirius XM is 4%. So at this point, it's not an even playing field by any means. LaFontaine Oliver, welcome to town. Welcome to WYPR. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
LaFontaine Oliver is our new president and general manager. We want to thank the Diz for lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation about the conservative movement in America with George Will, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, and Thomas Frank, the author of What's the Matter with Kansas. Midday's director and engineer is Luke Spicknell. Rob Sivek, Sienna Greaves, Kathleen Cahill produce our program. Jamila Krempel is our digital producer. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. Our interns are Rob Velasquez and Margot Kohler. Stay tuned for Here and Now. That's coming up next after the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening today and every day. We appreciate it. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.